Bilingual in America.
Tunei al-lugha fi America.
Bilinguismo negli Stati Uniti.
Bilingue in America.
Ser bilingue in America.
在美国能说两种语言的人.
I'm Suzanne Lasser.
I'm Yarina Sanxiang.
And this is Bilingual in America.
Hi, I'm Yarina Sanxiang, and this is Bilingual in America. And today we have the pleasure of speaking to educational and clinical leaders Angela Alvarez Cooper and Dr. Laura Flores Gomez. Ladies, welcome. I just want to give a context for who you are and what you bring to the landscape. Angela Alvarez Cooper is a dedicated bilingual speech and language pathologist, serving children of all ages and abilities. She's currently working in a school setting. She is an active and certified member of the American Speech Language Hearing Association. She sees private clients in person in the Westchester and New York areas, and also provides teletherapy services for non-local clients. She's presented for colleges and universities, and additionally, she's traveled internationally to conduct evaluations, treatment sessions, and even supported the construct of a bottle school in Guatemala. And then with her partner in crime, Dr. Laura Flores Gomez, who immigrated to the United States at the age of 9 from Colombia, completing her doctoral studies at Fairleigh Dickinson University with a study dedicated to psychological evaluations of bilingual children. Her passion to be of service is ever constant. Her service to bilingual families began in 2009 as an administrative assistant and director of children's educational programs, and is now currently serving as a psychologist in a school setting. She also serves families at a community clinic and is a presenter for educators and families. And ladies, I just want to say, do you sleep?
Not really.
Because you also have personal lives, right?
Very true. Thank you for the introduction, by the way.
Yes, thank you so much. And I think life is about balance. So we try to find balance within everything that we do.
Of course, of course. Before we jump into the meat and the nitty gritty of our conversation today, if you could each just give us a little context of your own bilingual journey, serve as a connector for our listeners today.
Of course. So my bilingual journey started, it wasn't by choice. So I was born in Colombia. I was there until I was 9 years old, and my family decided to migrate to the United States. This had been a plan that my family had even before I was born. I was not aware, but I ended up coming to the United States and, you know, going into school, I had to learn English. And throughout my life, I've continued to acquire English. And I feel like even it's been now more than 20 something years, I feel like it's a forever learning process. But I've also tried to stay true to my roots. So just as much as I admire English, I also try to stay connected with my Spanish.
So, you know, that's really important because I feel like once you're a language learner, you're always acquiring language. Like there are words that I know in Spanish that I don't know in English, and words that I know in English that I don't know in Spanish. And I think that's really important that people understand that whatever languages you choose to learn, you're constantly acquiring language. And that's a really important distinction. Mm-hmm. And what about you, Angela? Tell us a little bit about your bilingual beginnings.
Yes. So I was born in New York. My mother was born in Puerto Rico and my father was born in Spanish Harlem. So growing up, my grandmother spoke to us in Spanish only. She did not speak English. And we also had a caretaker since I was 7 months old up until I graduated from high school. And she also only spoke Spanish. She had a Colombian dialect. So I had the Puerto Rican dialect, I had the Colombian dialect going on. So a lot of times when I speak Spanish, people think that I'm, you know, come from Colombia because of my caretaker speaking to me in the dialect, the Colombian dialect. I would say after my caretaker left, I didn't use as much Spanish. But now, obviously, being a bilingual speech and language pathologist, I'm always trying to learn the language, continuously learn the language. My population is a lot of Spanish, you know, speaking children. So I do work with bilingual children. But yeah, I mean, I love being an SLP. I love being a speech and language pathologist. I love working with kids. And that's my background.
I really appreciate you sharing that, because so many times when we're born here in the United States and we're traveling back and forth in our sense of being and in our identity of who are we, and even having an influence through your nanny, that's a different Spanish lens, but it all contributes to you and fulfills why you do what you do. So thank you for sharing that. So in preparation for this, I have to first acknowledge, you know, your preparation for this interview, because you were so thoughtful in like how to tease out the questions and the information that we want people to walk away with. And so we're going to set with what you thought was important to first unpack the process of second language acquisition.
Yes. So I'll start with giving a brief overview on second language acquisition theory. And I think it's so important to acknowledge that first, because sometimes when children are undergoing second language acquisition, those things can present to teachers or to other adults that may not be as familiar with second language acquisition process as being either learning disabilities or language disorders. So just wanted to talk about like what would be typically the progression of acquiring a second language. So according to the second language acquisition theory, the first stage is the pre-production stage, which some people know it as the silent period. So this is the stage where the child or the individual, it also applies to adults and adolescents. So this is the stage where they're really focusing in comprehension and they're really just listening to their environment. And they'll start to provide yes or no responses eventually. And this typically occurs within the first 2 to 3 months of second language exposure. The second stage is the early production stage, and this typically occurs after the first 3 months. It lasts about 6 months, and this is where the students or the adults in this stage, they are still focused on their comprehension, but they begin using 1 to 2 to 3 word phrases. The third stage typically occurs 6 months to 2 years after second language exposure. It's known as the speech emergence stage. And during this stage, the individual's comprehension, vocabulary, and use of sentences have increased. So this is typically where you will see somebody who appears to have a strong social language in the second language, but maybe necessarily their academic language is still developing and not there. So there might be a teacher that sees that, oh, but the student can communicate so well, but why are they doing so poorly, you know, with reading and social studies? So this is the stage that sometimes there's some confusion because the child or the individual appears to have more of those language skills. The fourth stage is the intermediate fluency stage, and this occurred 2 to 3 years after second language exposure. Again, the vocabulary continues to expand. Their sentences have fewer grammatical errors in their speech. And last but not least is the last stage, which is the advanced fluency stage. And this occurs 5 to 7 years after second language exposure. So in reality, somebody who is learning a second language, it will take about 5 to 7 years until their language is similar, or at least in general able to be like somebody who has that as their first language. And this is super important because even thinking about students going into high school or college taking tests, it's not going to be until 5 to 7 years that they're really going to be able to achieve like their monolingual counterparts.
Mm-hmm. So important that you really create these distinctions in the development. I remember supervisors coming in to observe me, and I had newcomers in my class, and they would say, well, why didn't so-and-so speak? You know, I said, well, they're here 2 weeks, you know, they're in their silent period. They can come up and participate and point. It's not that they're not participating, but they're participating as they need to. And then on the opposite side of that is still, the research still says that still it takes 5 to 7 years to express yourself in a way. And for me, I always remember when I first started thinking in English, right? Like where my brain was not translating anymore. And it was in fifth grade. So it was at that 5-6 year mark that I remember, I was like, I'm not translating anymore in my brain. I'm actually thinking in the language that I'm going to speak in. Yep. So for educators and for parents, super important to make this distinction. And you were going to say something.
Yeah, no, just to add to what you just commented, like for me, Spanish was my first language. And I, again, I came when I was 9 years old. I learned all of my math facts when I was in Colombia and I learned them in Spanish. And even to this day, doing math problems, like in order to do them fluently, I have to think in Spanish when I do math. Mm. So that's also something to take into account. Like it could, like it's been so many years and for some reason I still have to go back to Spanish when I do math.
Right. I mean, and isn't that something that, I mean, that is your primary language for math. And so that is still what you lean on to do your most accurate and most worthy work in math. So I love that distinction. So
I just also wanted to add that as a bilingual speech and language pathologist, we also have to distinguish the difference between is the child going through the silent period or is the child selectively mute? So a lot of times we have teachers you know, that come to me and they say, hey, you know, Angela, I have this child and they're just not speaking. You know, I'm constantly talking to them or the other kids in the classroom are talking to them. And they're not saying a word. I think, you know, that they have selective mutism. And then I have to say, okay, hold on. Before we start labeling children, let's, you know, figure out, you know, this child just came from such and such country. This is the amount of time that they've been here for. A lot of times these children go through a silent period and then also kind of breaking down the second language acquisition to teachers who may not know about second language acquisition. Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness that you're there to advocate for them and to bring that distinction because it's so true. We right away want to fix. We want a label so we can understand so then we can fix what we think is going on. But really, what we need to give our language learners who first show up is the gift of time and grace and really just to watch and learn what they do know, what they do bring to the table, what their experiences are, and whatever they're ready to do that, whether that is through pictures, through their home language, through being quiet for a moment because they're processing or they're still going through their shock of like, I'm in a completely different place. I love that you really bring that distinction because we're not all trained to have that lens. So you ladies generated some awesome questions that often parents bring up to you. And I love the conversations and the questions that you brought up because I feel like they're really real and important for educators and for parents. So you had shared with me some of the common questions that parents might ask. One was, my child has been exposed to two languages since birth. Will this make my child's language delay even worse? And since we're talking, having this conversation during the month of April, which is Special Education Month, I love these questions because I think these are things that people have misconceptions about.
Yes. So I can go ahead and answer that question. First of all, there's a difference between a simultaneous bilingual and a sequential bilingual. So simultaneous bilinguals are typically those children who learn another language before 3 years old, so from birth to three. And then you have sequential bilinguals who learn a second language after the age of three. If your child has been exposed to two languages since birth and they have a language delay, being exposed to two languages will not make their language delay, quote unquote, even worse. So there was an article on the American Speech and Language Hearing Association website, and they quote, you will not confuse your child, cause or worsen speech or language problems, or slow down their learning by using your languages with your child. In fact, having a strong foundation in one language supports additional language learning, end quote. So it is important to also note that there's a difference between a language delay, a language disorder, and a language difference. So with the language delay, a child's language skills are acquired in a typical sequence, but lag behind peers their own age. A language disorder is characterized by atypical language acquisition that significantly disrupts communication across settings. And a language difference is a ruled, governed language style that deviates in some way from the standard usage of the mainstream culture. So whether a child has a language delay or a language disorder, the underlying delay or impairment will manifest in both languages. So if they have a language delay in English, they will also have a language delay in Spanish. If they have a language disorder in English, for example, they will also have a language disorder in Spanish. However, it is not due to being bilingual or learning a second language.
Girl, this just blows up.
Let's clear it up.
Oh my goodness. Can I tell you how this has been like an ongoing
yes.
debate, conversation, confusion, chaos of just really ala salima to you. Like that is the most complete, more accurate answer that I've ever heard ever in my life. I don't think that we talk enough about children who are simultaneously bilingual or multilingual or sequentially bilingual or multilingual. What a great distinction to really help us tease out, because so many things are thrown around when you sit at a table. When you're sitting at a table where a child is being evaluated and services are being determined for them, we don't talk about that part. Mm-hmm. And it's crucial that families understand, because then they walk away with guilt sometimes, like, I did this to my child. Mm-hmm. I created confusion. I created this disability or this delay or this situation for my child. And our families need to feel empowered around their children and what they do for them. And that being who they were did not create that for their child.
Correct. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Amazing. This was another question. If my child has a delay in their first language, can I introduce a second language?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The language delays can occur in both monolingual children and bilingual children. However, bilingualism in itself does not cause the delay. So speak two languages, speak three languages, speak four languages if you want to. I think it's just so important to emphasize that bilingual does not cause a delay or disorder.
I love how clear cut the answers are and that people can walk away empowered with this. Why is it, do you think, this is not part of our conversation per se, but why is it that you think that sometimes at the table they'll say, oh, you confused your child, you know, in speaking two languages? Is it just people not knowing and it's like their own personal experience or?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's because it's like a he said, she said type of thing. So I heard from this professional that if you speak more than one language, you may confuse the child. So you should just stick to one language versus kind of doing their own research and reading through the articles, reading through the research, reading through the studies. There's articles dated back into 1996. I mean, we're in 2024. There's been so much update in research in and of itself. So I feel like people really have to try to advocate for themselves, advocate for their children. And, you know, sometimes, yes, it's okay to listen to the professionals, but also do your own research. And the research is clear that there is this, it does not, bilingualism does not cause a delay or a disorder.
The research is based on science, not from a few years, but we're talking about 30 plus years of science. You know, that's substantial. That's important. How about this question? If a parent asks, should I stop speaking my home language to my child?
So no. When parents decide to stop speaking their home language with their child, there's a few situations that can occur. So I'll give three situations that can occur. So the first situation is that if they stop speaking their home language with their child, it can affect the parent-child's connection and interaction, which can lead to emotional and psychological difficulties for the parents and the child. So there was actually a study conducted in 2000, and they concluded that, quote unquote, adolescents who conversed with their parents in different languages felt more emotionally distant from them and were less likely to engage in discussions with them than were youths who share the same language with their parents.
Mm.
Another point is that a child's connection to his or home language or to his or her home culture can be compromised. So language is more than just communication. Language is a part of us, right? It's a part of our culture, our identity, our heritage. So we don't want to lose that. So that's why it's important to keep that home language. And then lastly, there may be family members who only speak the home language. And if the child loses his or her ability to speak the home language, relationships with these family members can definitely have a negative impact. So think if, you know, Fifi's coming over, she only speaks Spanish, but you don't have, you know, the Spanish language background, you guys can't really effectively communicate versus if you were given that strong exposure from, you know, from birth or from whenever you were exposed to the language. It's just that that connection is different.
Mm-hmm. And maybe something that we can add is in terms of modeling language for children. So yes, sometimes we'll have parents who English is not their strong language, is not the language that they're most familiar with, but they still attempt to speak English rather their home language at home. And that can actually have detrimental effects for the child.
Impacts vocabulary. So it's really important that you are a strong, you present good, strong language models to children.
All really important points. As you were talking, I was just remembering, because I remember my first grade teacher telling my mom, you have to speak to her in English only. How is my mom going to be my mom? I was 6 years old. I still needed a lot of parenting. And how was I going to continue to grow my maternal language? And I still hear comments like that, believe it or not. Even with everything that we know, even with all the science to back it, every so often I hear a teacher give misinterpreted information that supports what my mom was told. So, and even now, you know, I've been assessing incoming kindergartners in my role. And a lot of times parents will tell me, oh, ellos hablan puro inglés. They speak completely everything in English. And when I have the interview with the child, they know some English, but it's not that they speak only in English. It's they're really, truly still acquiring language. They're 4 years old. In my 30 plus years of teaching, I feel like no one has been so clear as to what the science says. Really awesome, ladies. Here is another question. What does the research say about bilingualism and language development?
Mm-hmm. So yes, so there is research to support that a strong foundation in a child's home language has been found to help a child learn a second language. We also know that research tells us that parents should speak to their child in whichever language is most comfortable to them, whether in their native language or a mixture of languages. There is research to support that exposure to multiple languages does not have a negative effect on language development. However, what we mentioned before, as Laura had mentioned, and I had mentioned, it's important to note that we want to be good, strong language models for our children in whichever language we are communicating with them in. And then there is also research to support that children with language delays or disorders can, in fact, learn a second language. We do not need to refrain from exposing a child to multiple languages because of a language delay or disorder. And also on my website, as a resource to parents, I have a website, www.takodaslp.com. So T-A-K-O-D-A. And in the free resources section, there's a tab that says bilingualism research. And there's tons of research articles from Dr. Kate Crowley, who posted on her leadership project website that support the importance of bilingualism that support the distinguish between language delay, language disorder, typical language development, and then just the research behind the importance of bilingualism.
So powerful. I love that. And what a great resource. Thank you for sharing that.
Not only is bilingualism beneficial for like language development, but it's also beneficial in terms of cognitive development. So there was actually a study conducted in 2011 that was titled Development of Bilingual Children, Cognitive Development of Bilingual Children, and they examined the benefits and differences of bilingual children's linguistic and cognitive development. And they found that the bilingual children were significantly more capable in multitasking and metalinguistic awareness. So their executive functioning skills were stronger than the monolingual children. However, they did see that for the bilingual children, their grammar and their vocabulary did develop more slowly. And I think that might be one of the reasons why teachers or educators that may not be so familiar with the research, what they see is that bilingual children may take more time to acquire the grammar and vocabulary, but that doesn't mean that it's because we're doing something wrong. It's just part of the process of them acquiring multiple languages at the same time.
So many times, like in dual language programs, when families feel like they want to abandon the program, like, oh, you're not learning English fast enough, or they're not learning the second language, in many cases is Spanish, fast enough, it makes sense that it would take more time. You're developing grammar and spelling and vocabulary in two lanes, making connections, but really it's distinct. It makes sense. And then at some point, it doesn't matter. Like, they've caught up enough. Well, I'm going to say caught up in air quotes, right? They've gone through their process and then they're bilingual or multilingual. And so we really just need to stay true to the course. Like, if our end goal is we want our children to be bilingual, multilingual, stay true to the course, because that's part of the process. And you also do a YouTube channel. Hello.
Yes.
So, if you could just tell us a little bit about, like, who's the intended audience and why did you create it? And what are some of the things that you discuss on there? Because we totally want to like hook up with you and follow you on YouTube.
Of course. So our YouTube channel is something that we started fairly recently. And the intended audience is really for everybody, but we do frame our discussions towards helping parents navigate. And right now it's the special education process. Being bilingual clinicians, we often get many questions about the special education process. Many parents are not well informed in what their rights are, where they can seek information, what do the evaluations mean, what to expect at meetings. So really, we just wanted to create more of an informative platform and a resource. And we do our videos in English and Spanish because we do want to make sure that we're able to reach as many parents that we can. We do plan to discuss in future videos other topics related to education, language disorders, cognitive disabilities. But again, we're just at the very beginning of our journey.
I love this. And I'm sure you could even do like frequently asked questions like we did today. Yes. On one of your episodes, because I mean, you prepped for it and you're ready to rock and roll with that. And the name of the channel is Thoughtful Talks in Education. Did I get it right?
Yes, you did. And for some reason, when you type in Thoughtful Talks in Education, our videos don't come up right away. But if you do type in Mrs. Angela and Dr. Laura, our videos will pop right up.
What a wonderful resource, and how smart that you're providing that in English and in Spanish, because you're really covering a huge number of a population. Even for our teachers, you know, who don't live with this lens all the time, we're just not prepared enough in this conversation. You know, maybe it's like one little course you take in your college prep and then you move on to the next thing, but it's an important piece to really understand. So kudos to you ladies for our families, for our educators. Like, what a wonderful resource you're creating there.
Thank you.
So I had shared with you that our hashtag is Speak Your Beauty.
Which we love, by the way.
I know. Thank you. I love it too. I feel like it anchors me to remember that whatever I leave in the world as an imprint, I want it to be spoken and to be beautiful. Tell me, how else do you speak your beauty in the world?
So I guess I can start. So I find that there are many qualities that make someone beautiful. And for me, brains, AKA knowledge, is one of them. So I personally speak my beauty by sharing my knowledge with others, especially in relation to my field, so speech and language. Whether it's providing information on feeding milestones or speech and language milestones, I would say that as a first-time mom, I have learned so much throughout the year. So my daughter will be one next week. And bringing a child into this world and in this day and age is completely different from when our parents brought us into this world. So for me, it was over 3 decades ago. And so a lot has changed, especially in regards to research. So I would say approximately 90% of what I have learned as a first-time mom was either from prior knowledge due to my field or doing research on my own, as well as going through the experiences that I have gone through the past year with my daughter. So I have shared many research articles and personal experiences on my motherhood journey through social media platforms. And so many moms, even dads, have reached out to me for some advice, guidance, and support. I love being a resource, and I tell people all the time, please reach out. I would love to help. So yes, I love speaking my beauty by sharing my knowledge, and that's by helping others.
That's beautiful.
I would say similarly to Angela, like one of the ways that I speak my beauty is by sharing my knowledge and helping others. It's always been part of me and growing up. And I've had so many people help me. I am a sequential language learner, like Angela had mentioned. And I had many people throughout my childhood, teen years, and even adulthood kind of helped me through this process and navigate. And I want to do the same for others. So that's one of the ways that I speak my beauty, by sharing knowledge and helping. And then the other part is just embracing my cultural background. And, you know, we talked earlier in our conversation how we're always learning. We're always acquiring like especially with language. And at times I feel like I'm not from here, but I'm also not from there. Mm-hmm. I'm like somewhere in between. And that's okay. That's what makes us unique. That's what makes us special. And I think helping others embrace that is also another way that I speak my beauty.
Oh, I love that. Well, I feel especially full, like my cup is full in speaking to you ladies today. Just so beautiful. Educational and clinical leaders, Angela Alvarez Cooper and Dr. Laura Flores Gomez, thank you for all that you do, for the legacy of work that you continue to grow, for how you continuously reach out your hand and pull somebody else up. That's what I got as you were sharing about your beauty. And I really thank you for enlightening me in this conversation. And I hope so many educators and families will feel a sense of, I got this. I'm not harming my child. I'm contributing to my child. This is part of my legacy. This is part of my heritage. And I am a good parent. So thank you, ladies, for everything that you do. I really appreciate this conversation and all the good work that you leave.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for allowing us to be part of this. So we really appreciate it.
Thank you for your interest in the stories we share. By sharing, following, and liking our podcast on anchor.fm Bilingual in America and our Instagram blog at bilingualinamerica.podcast, you are speaking your beauty. We welcome your comments and feedback, and we appreciate your support.
Follow us, like us, share us.